Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You know, I do this assessment with people when I work on intercultural competence coaching, and it sort of measures their effectiveness to engage interculturally on several different dimensions. And one of those is positive regard. And that's sort of like, how willing are you to trust people who are different than you? How open are you to engage with difference? Do you assume the best about people or not? That, along with self-awareness, ironically, is what people usually score the lowest on. And so when somebody scores low on positive regard and we want to work on that, what I do with them is I say, okay, let's talk about the assumptions that you make about different groups of people. Let's talk about the stereotypes that you have about different groups of people. And we make an exhaustive list, and then their task is to find any and every piece of information they can that contradicts that.
How you dare, how you dare. That was the voice of Lena Papadopoulos. Now, Lena, as you find in the interview, grew up in a very similar way that most TCKs grow up in. You know, being in the middle of different cultures, not fully being one while not being the other. And in that process, through mental health, self-care, and just sheer curiosity about the world, she created a career for herself, a career path that led her to become this amazing cross-cultural educator and consultant. We dove into some of her techniques as she tries to get people to open up. We dove into why she feels like there's a transformative power in intercultural competence. Things that we need in today's world. You know, the best way to see people is to humanize them, and we dive into different ways to do that. So, in short, it's a really, really fun interview. I'm always excited when I meet fellow cross-cultural trainers, consultants. You know, it's like, you know, you're meeting one of your fellow brothers and sisters. And I felt like I met a sister in today's episode. Before we dive into the episode, though, I want to talk about my upcoming tour dates. As you know, the book is coming out on September 4th. I'm going to put a link to the book in the show notes so you can pre-order the book. And please, please pre-order. The more pre-orders, the more the publisher publishes the books, and the more the publisher publishes the books, the more they get distributed in different bookstores, which will in essence increase the traffic. The book is called Use Your Difference to Make a Difference. It's a book on connecting across cultures effectively in divisive times, which ironically is a lot of what we talk about here with Lena. I'm in the beginning stages of planning a book tour this fall in the United States for the book. So I'm going to put a link in the show notes that includes the two cities that I have so far. I want to do at least a 10-city tour, so make sure that you subscribe to the newsletter or you constantly check the link that I put in the show notes to see if your city is being added to the 10-city tour, okay? I love you all. I would really, really value your support. And make sure you practice everything Lena says in this interview. She's amazing, and you're amazing. Check out the interview. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of As Told by Nomads, and today's guest is Lena Papadopoulos. Now, Lena is an intercultural educator, consultant, and facilitator. She offers program design, development workshops, and retreats, as well as intercultural competence coaching to help purpose-driven schools, organizations, businesses, and individuals to create customized experiences that facilitate self-discovery and self-awareness. Already, this is one of my favorite things to do already. This is very similar in line with what I do. Her thing is making sure that meaningful human connections and respectful intercultural engagement are formed wherever she lands or touches people's lives. Her driving force is her desire to educate the whole individual, mind, heart, and soul. Welcome to the show, Lena.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
The pleasure is mine. First thing I want to say before we even get to your story is your name, Lena Papadopoulos. Okay.
Yeah.
So is where's the origin? Is it Greek?
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
Yes.
Good.
My parents are both from Greece.
Okay. And the reason why I was surprised, because when we were doing the pre-interview, I mistakenly said Lena, and you said it's Lena. And is that a common mishap with your name when people try to pronounce it?
Yes. So everybody is so worried that they're going to mispronounce the last name, but actually that's usually what they get right. and my first name, because in Greek, Lena is how that name is pronounced, but in most parts of the world, it is pronounced Lena. So that's, and obviously it looks like Lena because it's L-E-N-A. So most people make the mistake. Unless you're from the South, where I grew up, and people call me Lana.
No, it's so funny because I made the same mistake. I was like, how do you say your last name? And I was so confident with your first name. And I was like, and I should have thought of it because people always mispronounce my first name. They say Teo and it's Tayo. But it's interesting to hear that. Okay. But you touched on it there. You said you grew up in the South. Can you talk about your background? Where did you grow up, initially, and how did you stumble or come across the third culture kid world?
Yes. So I grew up in South Carolina. Both of my parents immigrated to the U.S. from Greece. I spent a lot of time in Greece, kind of going back and forth. I went to school a little bit in Greece, but mostly in South Carolina. And you know, I always kind of had this experience of not quite being American enough, not being Greek enough. And so that experience really made me interested in learning about different cultures and different people of different backgrounds. And when I was in university, I got really involved in the international student community there. But it was later, like several years later, after I went to grad school, that I ended up working for a nonprofit social enterprise based in Asia. And we were designing and facilitating leadership development programs at international schools. So I was working with TCKs all the time. So that's how I had that connection through that.
I want to touch on that identity part, because the idea of not being American enough, perhaps not being Greek enough, what did that initially make you feel like?
It's like you just feel like you don't really fully belong in either place. You're kind of, there are aspects of my identity that are weird to Americans, aspects of my identity that are weird to Greeks. And then, of course, I saw that a lot with the third culture kids I was working with. So, when I created spaces for really honest, vulnerable conversation with them, what always came up was feeling isolated, feeling lonely, feeling a lack of belonging, not knowing where they fit. And actually, what was very, very interesting to me is that self-harm was coming up a lot with these students because they were, kind of like there's so much that they're dealing with, really high academic pressures, constantly moving, not really belonging or fitting in anywhere. And I think self-harm was a way that they could experience some sense of control. And also, I just think all these different stimuli, in a sense, they were becoming desensitized to a lot of things. And so this was also a way for them to feel. So it was a way to control how they felt. That was a really, really prevalent issue that I just really was not expecting when I started that work.
Yeah, and that's such a big, I'm glad that you brought that up, because it is a delicate topic to talk about, but it is something that happens often. You know, the idea of mental health and just really, dealing with the pressures of an external world or a world that's almost always defined by social media sometimes or external stories. Sometimes if you're not equipped to have that level of self-awareness and self-assuredness, you can start to find identity somewhere else in an external place, and it could be harmful. So with your observation, and as you said, you really started to see a path for you when you start working with what specific country in Asia, you said, or several countries in Asia?
So I was first based for a while in Beijing, and then I relocated to Bangkok. But I was responsible for all of our partnerships with all the schools we worked with throughout Southeast Asia and Europe. So I kind of just bounced around at these different schools running programs.
Well, okay. So this is, we're definitely going to touch on that. But one thing that I do want to touch on then for you, that is because you, in when we were talking before, you said that, especially as we're talking about self-harm here, you said developing a deeper sense of awareness of one's personal strengths, weaknesses, attitudes, and behaviors can really help with personal development and personal growth of someone. And I imagine that this can help with, you know, your mental health as well. So can you dive into that a little bit more? How can we develop a deeper awareness of our strengths, weaknesses, attitudes, behaviors?
Mm-hmm. So I think having this sort of cross-cultural engagement, intercultural exchange is a really powerful way to become self-aware, because you kind of have to be really self-aware to understand other people and why they're doing things. So developing intercultural competence allows you to understand what has shaped you culturally, socially, how you've been molded by your family, like what are all the things that have made you who you are. It's not really very easy to understand other people unless you understand that. And so that's, for me, that's at the core of intercultural competence. And that's one reason why I think it's so valuable. It's not just interacting effectively and respectfully cross-culturally, but it's really discovering who you are and understanding your place in the world and what that means. And so that's why I think it can be so transformative, because it really does start with the self.
Yeah. Well, then let's use you as an example. How did you become, really self-aware? You know, what were tools that you worked on within yourselves to really evaluate yourself from a level where you were able to grow and understand the parts about yourself that maybe were hidden as you were experiencing the formative periods of your life?
Mm-hmm. I think for me, it started in university when I was so involved in this international student community and being surrounded by so many different people from so many parts of the world who were coming at everything with a different perspective, a different, you know, set of values, way of viewing the world, and then questioning like, oh, but why do I view the world the way I view it? And then sort of inspired by my relationships with those people, I started to travel more and more. And to be honest, the beginning of my travel journey, a lot of it was trying to escape myself. And my mom said that to me once. She said, honestly, like, I don't know where you're going. I feel like you're just trying to run away from yourself. And I was so offended that she said that. so mad at her. And then I realized later, like, oh, I'm so offended because it's true. That is what I'm doing in a sense. But of course, you realize that's not possible because you are always there with you. And I have also struggled my whole life with mental health and bouts of depression and suicidal ideation. And that does not go away, right? It doesn't matter where I go, that follows me. So those things have just really forced me to look at myself and say like, okay, this is actually who I am and what I'm struggling with and what I need to face and deal with. And I now am like really, really an advocate for sitting with pain, working through pain, facing pain, and not trying to run away from it because right. of that experience.
Yeah. You know, and I thank you so much for sharing that, because I definitely identify. I think a lot of the problems we have today, especially with the divides, are because people are strangers to themselves. Mm-hmm. Now, if you do add an intercultural element, and I know you know this because you grew up in several cultures as well, there are certain cultures sometimes that, discussing mental health will require a different level of tact or integration. So yeah. How would you then incorporate that in cultures where, you know, mental health is not seen the norm? I mean, I can say that from my personal experience where when I grew up, you know, I was initially told that therapists were only for Americans, you know, or people in the West, and I'm Nigerian. And so I was always told to suck it up. So what would you say if you want to incorporate that in cultural norms like that?
Yeah, that can definitely be a tough one because you're right. It can culturally be something very shunned, something that's shameful to talk about. Mm-hmm. I spent like a year in China, and that's also the case there. Yeah, it's tough. I think just creating as safe spaces as possible for people to feel that they can share a bit about what they feel and maybe also explore culturally, okay, why is there a stigma around this? Why does it exist? Why is it not accepted? And just looking at the ways that different people in different places perceive mental health and deal with it, and just having a conversation about how that is different and why it might be different. I mean, it's not easy, but I think the truth is that when people are struggling with that and dealing with it, they know that that's the case for them, and they know that that's something that causes them pain, and it's something that they wish they could share and wish they had a space to address. So I think once it's created, it can almost be a relief, even if it's super, super uncomfortable for them to get into it initially. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You know, what's interesting, what I'm hearing is initially you said, you know, you talked about the importance of self-awareness, and that when you understand your strengths and weaknesses, attitudes and behaviors, you can then use that to approach people from different cultures because you know which aspects of yourself to lean on to tap into your connection muscle. So if you want to connect with someone from a different culture that's not maybe used to being as open, it's really about knowing how to listen and mm-hmm. understand what, you know, the path for connection is, and then incorporating that into their lives. Mm-hmm. And so not making a cookie cutter is probably the best way to incorporate cross-cultural or mental health discussion in different cultures, because you have to make it a conversational piece that they can see themselves growing in. And you, to your point, the first thing is to create a safe space.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. So we talked about that, but what about learning about different ideas, values, norms, experiences, and behaviors? I think curiosity is a very undervalued assets that many people don't tap into. I also feel like a lot of the problems we see in today's world are stemmed directly from fear and ignorance. And mm-hmm. those things can be solved or limited if we follow our curiosities more. So mm-hmm. what are ways that people can learn about different ideas, values, and norms?
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I mean, I think the easiest way, and maybe, you know, the least threatening way, is to seek out information, to read books and read articles and listen to different kinds of music and watch different kinds of movies. You know, I do this assessment with people when I work on intercultural competence coaching, and it sort of measures their effectiveness to engage interculturally on several different dimensions. And one of those is positive regard. And that's sort of like, how willing are you to trust people who are different than you? How open are you to engage with difference? Do you assume the best about people or not? And that is probably, that along with self-awareness, ironically, is what people usually score the lowest on. And so when somebody scores low on positive regard and we want to work on that, what I do with them is I say, okay, let's talk about the assumptions that you make about different groups of people. Let's talk about the stereotypes that you have about different groups of people. And we make an exhaustive list. And then their task is to find any and every piece of information they can that contradicts that. Mm. So, you know, so just seeking out examples that contradict your bias, I think, is a good way. Like you said, curiosity is so important, and there aren't enough people who are willing to ask, okay, why is that person doing that? Why do they think that? It's just like, oh, because it doesn't align with me, it's wrong. But yeah. No, you have to understand where it comes from, just like the way that you think and do is, you know, contextual, just as it is for them.
Yeah. Yeah. You have to understand the root of mm-hmm. the potential problem. And sometimes a lot of times people don't think that a lot of the way they think they are is because of something that they were conditioned to believe, or a bias that they have, or value that they believe in. So that level of self-assessment allows you to really understand where to start from. So, mm-hmm. okay. Once there's that level of awareness, which I love that it keeps coming back to self-awareness. Mm-hmm. How do you then move to the part of interacting and cultivating meaningful relationships with people that maybe don't have or share the same experiences that you've had?
Right. Well, yes, this is where I think, again, curiosity is important. So just having conversations like, oh, well, that's interesting. That's different from what I believe or think. Why is it that you think that? Just going back to what we were just saying, instead of just making an assumption that, oh, that way is wrong, or just really seeking to listen to people, as we said before, and not feel, you know, the need to teach or educate, but to be educated. And I mean, I really, really encourage people to develop intercultural relationships. And that can mean anything, right? It can be somebody from a different country, somebody from a different faith, a different gender identity. Like, all of these are cultures. So just seeking to understand like what somebody else's life experience is like, and showing up, being vulnerable, leaning into discomfort, you know, just, I mean, because it can really be uncomfortable for people to sort of come against what is different. But that's also where there's the most opportunity to learn and grow, because if you're constantly surrounding yourself with like-minded people who think and behave and believe everything you do, then your mind is never going to be expanded to any other ideas or possibilities. You know?
Yeah. No.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
It's interesting because it does, this is a concept that you do believe in. Because what you're saying lends itself to something that you talk about often. It's, you say, assume the best about people. And limit your tendency to judge and stereotype different. So if you're saying assume the best, you're talking about assuming the best intentions. Now, on the surface, I'm sure there's someone out now saying, what are you saying, Lena? What do you mean? I don't know that person. That person's a stranger. Haven't you heard of stranger danger? What are you talking about? And this is me playing devil's advocate, because I do teach this as well. But I want to really address that person right now, or those group of people, because I do understand that as well, where you're talking about, hey, okay, you told me to be self-aware. Fine, read, talk, engage. about, even with people that share different beliefs with me. Now you want me to just assume the best? What about what I just saw in the news? What are you talking about? What do you say to that?
Right. Well,
I had to be animated. I was, don't mind. I was just pretending to be that person. So I'm trying to put you in that mindset.
Right. Of course. But if, you know, if the other side is going to, you know, how do you feel when other groups or other types of people or whatever are making judgments and assumptions and have a negative sort of view of you without taking any time to get to know you, right? Like, put yourself in that position. You know that you are trustworthy or that you are a good person or whatever, but if they just label you based on one of your identities and have no interest in getting to know you, then obviously isn't that going to be hurtful to you? Or aren't you going to be upset by that, offended by that? You know, like, let's say Greece and Turkey, for example, have this intense conflict that they claim has been going on since the beginning of time, which is not true. This wasn't what my whole graduate research was about. But they view each other as this enemy. And this is very much based on religious identity and how that plays a role in national identity. And collectively, you can ask a lot of Greek people and they say, oh, yes, like, we hate Turks. And you ask Turkish people and they say, we hate Greeks.
Yep.
But then one-on-one, like, you'll find out actually they have, like, best friends from these places, right? So it's like, yes, but you have to take that example and see, okay, that person breaks that stereotype. So they cannot all be bad, right? That's the value of developing relationships with individuals, is that they prove those generalizations wrong.
Yeah. I love that so much because you're really stressing humanization. And those conflicts are things I think about often, by the way. It's no secret to my listeners that I grew up under two military dictatorships for the first part of my life. And a lot of the things that stem from that cause the conflict are tribalism. But I do think about Greece, Turkey, Armenia, India, Palestine, India, Pakistan, Israel, mm-hmm. Palestine, all these countries, right, that have deep, deep rooted conflicts. And I've had conversations with people on different sides. And it is, like you say, it's hate, all that. And it always causes me to really want to try and solve that. But when I do what you do, which is what you said, it's hear both sides. You can hear individually that they, you know, that most of them will be willing to have a conversation. It's more in the identity aspect, the national, the religion, or the pride that comes with that. So I certainly hope that we can get to one place where we learn how to humanize and see a bigger picture. But I also understand the complexity of what that is, just because it's, I think some of these things have been generations of of stories and ideas, and it's you know, the stories we tell ourselves sometimes end up becoming stronger than those things.
Right, and like a good deal of my research, you know, was also showing how basically this bias of the Greeks have toward Turks and vice versa has been integrated into the educational system. So people are also being taught things that aren't true, for the sake of maintaining this divide. And, you know, that's why we have to question. We have to question everything that we receive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, this is so good. I feel I always love, meeting people in the field and talking about this, because sometimes, I don't know if you've experienced this, but when you have these thoughts in your head, you know, I'm always accused of being idealistic. and so I'm like, wait, am I just being naive here? Or and so when I hear someone say something similar, and like what you said, I have like this internal jolt of energy. So I'm like, I'm not insane. Okay, so it's not me, because mine comes with personal experience as well. But what I'm hearing is you're saying a lot. Oftentimes, we judge people based on their actions, but we judge ourselves based on our intentions, right? And mm-hmm. we don't normally have that same attitude when we think about other people. And so sometimes if we rush to assumption, it can be dangerous because it really then feeds into the shadow sides of ourselves, which is quicker mm-hmm. to judge and to stereotype difference. And if you look at history, throughout history, and I talk about this often, is the biggest problems that we've had, any war, conflict, disagreement, has been because of an adverse reaction to something that's different. Whether it's a different culture, different religion, different shade of skin, different eye color, whatever it is, different nationality. And so the better we are at forming relationships with, or getting more comfortable rather with difference, mm-hmm. the better we'll become as a global world, citizens, essentially.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. That's why I say use your difference to make a difference, people.
Yeah.
Hopefully that resonates. Okay. What about dealing with challenging emotional experiences? Because as much as we've talked about the best intentions, there are times when some people will actually have traumatic experiences with different backgrounds, different cultures. And for some people, it will just strengthen their mm-hmm. their bias and mm-hmm. their stereotype, or it would just make, it challenging for people to connect. So how do you recover from such an experience?
Right. Yes, because it is definitely the case. You know, that's another interesting thing that I see when I do this assessment with people is that sometimes they will regress in some areas after having intercultural exposure and being faced with difference. And usually they most often regress in their emotional resilience. And that's because either they made a mistake and felt ashamed and were too afraid to try to rectify it and just kind of withdrew into themselves, or they felt aggravated or agitated or upset about something that they experienced that they felt reinforced the negative assumption or bias that they had in the first place. And so then they began to see like everything colored with that same negativity. So like, for example, I went to lunch with someone the other day who has been living here for close to a year now. And she's from the US and she was talking to me about how different work is, right? Because everything is culturally colored. So the way that people process information, the way that they make decisions, everything they do is different from what she's used to. And in her mind, it's ineffective. It's inefficient. It takes too long. She doesn't like the way that it's done. So now, like, that's her experience of everything around her, because she's so upset about her work life that now the transport is inefficient and ineffective, and the way that this thing happens and that thing. And that's what she sees everywhere all around her. And she actually was like, she could recognize that and see that and know that, okay, my experience at work is coloring my experience here overall. And I hate it because of that. But right, when we do that and overgeneralize like about everything and don't take the time to actually, again, be self-aware and see like how we are allowing one situation to color everything, right? It's always coming back to the self-awareness and self-understanding.
Yes, it does indeed. And for those listening, when she says here, she's in the country of Georgia. Okay. Yes. So that's what she means. And it's not Georgia, the state. So
right.
A lot of people are always surprised that there's a country called Georgia. There is a country called Georgia.
Right.
I know where it is, but for those listening, what countries border it, would you say?
Right. So Georgia is bordered by Turkey, Armenia, Azerbaijan, and Russia.
Exactly. Exactly. And so I've met a few Georgians, and sometimes I think the ones I've met have had more of a Russian influence, and that's probably because they come from that area. But like you just heard Lena say, different neighboring countries. So depending on which part they live in, you might detect a few influences. But it's very important as you're engaging in intercultural competence to really seek to understand different cultures and to start to read up on the world and understand that the world is much bigger than we give it credit for. I think a lot of the stories that we see in the world tend to be to highlight, you know, certain aspects of the world, but a lot of other parts of the world don't get to be told. So studying geography, studying world history and actual world history, not revisionist history, can really help opening your mind and potentially, you know, sparking your curiosity. So just a thought.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what, tell us then about what's taking you to Georgia. Why are you in Georgia right now?
Well, so I just kind of move around. I'm location independent. And so, I spent the last few months in Spain and now I'm here because I was very curious to learn more about Georgia and I wanted to see and experience it for myself. And so I'm living here until the middle of August and then I'll be spending a few months with my family in Greece. So I just kind of bounce around a bit.
The bouncing around a bit lifestyle, I always love that. That's the first time I've used that. So thank you for giving me that. That sounds like a book, actually. But how can one do that in a economical way?
Well, I mean, I think it really depends on where you choose to go, I guess. Well, of course, I'm from the U.S. I have an American passport. I'm super privileged in that, lots of passport privilege. So I can spend a whole year in Georgia without a visa, which obviously for a lot of people from a lot of places, visa-free yeah. travel is not so easy. And for me, where the dollars goes very far here. So, you know, of course, Georgians don't have the best salary, but for me, my money goes really far here. And so I just kind of choose, I guess, to be in places where I can be, where that is the case.
Gotcha. And for those listening, what she's saying about the passport is definitely true. I'm a Nigerian, so I definitely understand the level. So my passport is different from Lena's, for example, but one thing to explore, especially if you want to start traveling, is since I'm Nigerian, there are a lot of West African countries that I could go to because mm-hmm. of my proximity, and that you can start off with countries near you or countries that your country has a treaty with or things like mm-hmm. that. Commonwealth, for example, Nigeria is part of the Commonwealth, so the countries in that. So that sort of whets your appetite and starts mm-hmm. to get you to explore. And while you're doing that, you could also be applying for visas that take longer, but in the process, you're still embedded in different cultures. So I want you to think about it from a short-term, long-term point of view. And so I love that you brought up the idea of passport privilege, because sometimes you can then leverage that to expand your knowledge, which is what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. The other question before we start to get to the part where we wrap up the interview is mm-hmm. you organize a lot of workshops and you facilitate leadership development programs and you create customized experiences. There are many people here and who are listening who are aspiring consultants, aspiring facilitators. Can you walk us through your process?
So first I would do a sort of needs assessment with them, which could be like an hour to an hour and a half, and really get deep into why are they seeking this out? How do they think it's going to benefit them? What do they hope that the outcomes will be? I ask different questions so that I can better understand what are the challenges that I'm going to face coming into that space and into that specific like group of people. And then I get like a bajillion papers and I lay them out around me and I start like writing every kind of activity I can think of that would fit the different sort of categories that I want to address. And then I go through kind of organizing it and thinking about, okay, how does the one thing stack on the other? How do they connect? Like, I'm super, super intentional in everything that I create. So I put so, so much thought into how it all connects, how I'm going to weave it together and refer back to things. So that it's just everything is stacking on and scaffolding, I guess, so that, so that ultimately we reach their goals, but also like making sure that I allow for the flexibility to adapt to what's actually happening once I'm there, because, you know, you can plan and plan and plan, but then things don't always go the way you plan. And things might pop up that, you know, the person that I did the needs assessment with actually didn't know anything about. So I just kind of try to prepare myself for all the possibilities so that we can work through anything that we need to work through. And creating that safe space that I mentioned before is so, so important to me. So I've actually had a couple of people tell me that I'm not really like the best or right kind of person to do this kind of work because I'm not super energetic when I facilitate. I'm not super like smiley and happy and maybe the way I imagine you might be, like just full of life and energy. But I know that one thing I do so, so, so well is create space for people to feel comfortable and safe. And so I'm like a really good listener. I'm very intuitive. I pick up on really small things that other people may miss, and then I bring attention to them. So anyway, that's my process, I guess.
No, yeah, I do want to touch on that because there's a misconception that only extroverts can do this type of work, and I don't agree with that. And so to those people that said you can't do that, I'll tell them to just look at your success and then reassess. Wow, look at your success and reassess. I'm just rhyming. I'm sorry. This is in my head. because I certainly disagree with that, because the reason why I'm saying that is as someone who's done this and does the same thing you do and creates a customized experience, I think the first thing, and I agree with it, is creating a needs assessment is so key, because the biggest mistake and the reason why sometimes this gets a bad rap is because people think that you can transfer the same process across industries or across companies. And and it continues. And then you see stats that say, oh, well, this type of training fails, this type of training doesn't work. And I'm always saying it's probably because someone approached the cookie cutter approach. But the my experience with, because I identify as an ambivert, even though I present as an extrovert. I'm an ENFJ, so I guess for the most part, people think of me, identify with me as an extrovert. But there are moments where I need to recharge, and I love just being by myself. And then I'm also the same guy that likes to talk to people. But I think with my conversations with introverts, a lot of what I've heard is the understanding what type of things to include in presentations to facilitation that many people don't normally include, whether it's with activities or whether it's with things for personal development. And that can only come from someone that's had that experience of having to be exposed to extrovert presenting things and then, you know, lack of things that actually cater to their needs. And I definitely push back on that type of thinking, because there are many types of people in the world. And so you have to understand that there are many types of people within the people you've facilitated. As we wrap up, where can people find you?
Well, I have a website that's www.lenapapadopoulos.com. So if you can spell that, good luck. And then also I'm on social media on Instagram and Facebook also as Lena Papadopoulos. And I have not ventured into the world of Twitter, and I think I may not. So that's where I am.
All right, I'll make sure I put that in the show notes. But let's circle back to the final question that I always ask my guests, which is my mission statement reframed as a question. My mission statement is use your difference to make a difference. How do you, Lena, use your difference to make a difference?
Yeah, well, I think that exactly sort of what you said before, the fact that I am kind of this introverted person. I do like to spend a lot of time with myself. I spend a lot of time cultivating my self-awareness, trying to reflect on who I am, why I am, the things that I do, how I impact other people. I'm very intentional in how I engage with people. I listen. I really want to know people. Like you were talking about the humanizing aspect before, like I want to see every person as a unique individual and understand what makes them who they are. And I think that this is what I bring to the world. This is how I use my difference to make a difference, is to, I don't know, I guess allow people to come fully as they are and feel accepted.
That's a beautiful way to use your difference to make a difference, Lena. And once again, introverts rule, okay? thank you so much for spending time with us and really sharing your thoughts. This has been very enlightening.
Yes, thank you so much for having me.
The pleasure is mine. And ladies and gentlemen, till next time, use your difference to make a difference.
You've just been listening to the As Told by Nomads podcast. For more ways to reach out to Tayo and to use your difference to make a difference, head over to www.tayoroxon.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.